Good evening, everybody, and welcome back to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Corbrough, and you're listening in on talkradio.nyc, or you're watching us live now on facebook.com/talkradionyc, and happy to be back. I was gone last week. I'm going to go over that in a few minutes. I try to do the show every week, but when it's a live show, man, it's tough to do because I live such a crazy, eclectic life where I'm always on the road or I'm always doing something. But last week was no exception to that. So I had to be on the road, but I'll go over that in a minute. Going to recap the last couple of weeks here and also talk a little bit about the Olympics on the second half of my show. Like I do every week, I have a guest on the second half, and I've got a track and field journalist and historian, Mike Finelli. He's going to be joining us for the second half of the show. We're going to be talking about track and field at the Olympic Games that just wrapped up last week, some of the great performances, some of the more memorable performances. And we're also, he's actually a historian, as I mentioned, and we're going to be talking about some of his favorite Olympic moments and Olympic trials moments over the course of the 50 years that he's been competing in track and field, and he's been writing about it. And we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the second half of the show. But first of all, talking track and field. Now, today's Tuesday, and today, very sad news came out of University of Houston, where Cam Burrell, who was the 2018 NCAA Division I 100 meter champion, he ran 9.93 seconds, which is one of the fastest times in the world. And he's actually the son of longtime Houston head coach Leroy Burrell. Leroy was the former world record holder at 100 meters and went to University of Houston and is the longtime coach of University of Houston. Anyway, sad news. They found yesterday afternoon, Cam was discovered at his apartment, and he was deceased. And no real indication as to what happened. I want to say he was only like 26 years old, really young. And I'm not going to speculate as to the cause of death. They're going to release something, I think, later today. But I know Leroy. We were NCAA coaches, for a long time. We're on committees together. And I know that feeling of loss. I know that devastation that they must be going through, that I'm sure they're going through. And my heart goes out to Leroy and to all of Cam's family and friends and teammates at the University of Houston. And getting back to my last couple of weeks here. So 2 weeks ago, I had my buddy Mike Cunningham on the show from Gill Athletics. We were talking track and field and coaching and whatnot. And I had to head to California. I had to head to LA. I got a place out there where I had to go and film an exercise print ad for an exercise product. Usually when we do these things, they're non-disclosed. So it's like, I can't really say what it was for until it actually comes out, until the ads come out. But it was for a fitness product. It was actually the second print modeling ad that I had in the last 3 weeks. 3 weeks ago, I was up in Washington, D.C. For a print shoot. And then 2 weeks ago, I was in L.A. It's interesting when you go and do a print shoot, particularly a fitness shoot. And I touched on that last episode before I was leaving to go to it. I was like in the middle of preparing for a fitness shoot. Now, when you prepare for a regular print shoot, there isn't a whole lot of preparation involved. I mean, you're just, you are who you are. You look like what you look like, maybe a new haircut. Every once in a while, I'll be asked to get a manicure if my hands are going to be close up. And which is something I never would have said. I got to go get a manicure before I became an actor. But when you're getting ready for a fitness ad, it's a little different because you really don't have any idea until you get there what kind of an outfit you're going to be in. Are you going to be shirtless? I mean, I in a similar situation, I was one of the co-stars of a feature film that came out right before the pandemic in the festival world, where I played a retired boxer, and there was a scene. I had a bedroom scene where I had to be shirtless. So it was the same preparation as for that is when you go into a print shoot for a fitness shot. So you're not really sure what you're. So basically, what happens is, as I mentioned on that show, you don't look. When you see these guys in the movies and you see them in print ads and whatnot, and everybody's kind of chiseled up and kind of slimmed down or whatever it is, that's not real life. Okay. People don't just walk around looking like that. What ends up happening is, and it's actually fairly, I mean, it isn't that difficult. It's not like you're out here solving world peace or something, but essentially what you end up doing is you have to manipulate your nutrition and manipulate your body so that you're scaling yourself down over the course of like a week to 10 days so that on the day of the shoot or on the day of filming or whatever it is on that day, and maybe for a couple of days around that, you look at, you know, straight up as good as you're going to look. And what ends up happening is you start by manipulating the amount of water that you're intaking. So you intake a tremendous amount of water in the early stages, like say 7 to 10 days out. I mean, you're drinking like 7 liters of water a day. And then to kind of flush your body out, flush the carbs out of your muscles, and you're on like a high protein and even moderate fat diet. You're on a low carb diet. And then you slowly start cutting back the amount of water that you're drinking to the point where like the last day, you're only sipping on water the day of the shoot. You're essentially dehydrating yourself. That's why you look the way you do. And that's why you can only look that way for a little while. But I'm telling you, man, you can't get any hungrier or any thirstier than when you're getting ready to do a print ad, or you're getting ready to do an ad or a shoot where you've got to trim down. But anyway, print ad went great. Although I will say LA is crazy right now. I mean, just listen, I don't want to get into some political, you know, conversation about the homeless or whatever, but I've never seen anything like it. And of course I go to LA, you know, once, twice a month, and I'm out there for, you know, a week or whatever at a time. And it's just unbelievable to me. I can't even begin to wrap my head around it. And you've got so many places now in and around LA where the buildings, the businesses have gone out of business completely. These companies have gone out of business, and you have abandoned buildings everywhere, and you have these homeless encampments everywhere. And it's just, I mean, I feel for these people. Obviously I feel for these people. I'm a, you know, pretty socially liberal guy. At the same time, I just don't really understand how it can ever end. I just can't wrap my head around. I know that they're trying to move people from the encampments and putting them into old hotels or older hotels that the cities have purchased or leased out. I know they're doing that in Austin also, but it's unbelievable to me. So anyway, did that, came back, had to turn around and fly out to Oklahoma. And actually, so the reason I was going to Oklahoma is a sad one. I had to go out on Tuesday of last week, which was exactly at the time that we were having, that I would have had this show. We were having a celebration of life ceremony for one of my very best friends, Philip Bauer. I mentioned this a couple of months ago on another podcast, another episode, where my buddy Philip was regarded really all over the world as one of, if not the best Johnny Cash impersonator that there is. I mean, it really, the transformation, the voice, he had everything down, the even the tiniest idiosyncrasies about Johnny when he was performing, his facial expressions, everything, had it all down pat, and was getting ready to have the best year of his career. I was, in addition to him being one of my best friends, I was actually his agent and his manager as well. And so I know that 2020, before the pandemic hit, it was going to be an absolute amazing year for me. I had over 120 dates booked for him. And I was, thankfully, I was at his very last performance, which was up in Wisconsin. There's a little theater in Delvin, Wisconsin, that it's called the Belfry Theater. It's a small church that had been converted into a concert hall. Beautiful facility, beautiful area. And it was his last performance, because right. And I thankfully I was there for it. I mean, when you're in the world of concert production and promotion, and at the same time, I have an agency where I represent shows and sell the shows to venues. You don't normally go to the shows that you aren't promoting yourself. Normally, if you sell the show, you're just, it's really, you know, you collect the money and that's it, you know. But for this particular show, and particularly for Philip, I always like going to the shows. And when he came back from that show, he wasn't feeling well at the show, and he hadn't been feeling well for a while. And sadly, I mean, he went to the hospital and ended up being diagnosed with stage 4 colon and liver cancer, and literally passed away within like 10 days. Just total shocker. Just, I mean, even right now, I still can't even really wrap my head around it. But so we had to wait, you know, because of COVID, to be able to do a celebration of life for him. And Philip was one of the funniest people I've ever met. Now, I got a high standard when it comes to sense of humor, right? But so Philip was one of those people that met my high standard of what I consider to be funny. The guy was just crazy funny. He was always joking around, always doing practical jokes and whatnot. So anyway, what ended up happening on my trip, I'm going to tell the story when I come back from first commercial break here. But when I went on the trip, basically what happened was for the celebration of life, I had a case of his book. So he wrote this book called The Heavenly Oak by Philip Bauer, which was Amazon bestseller. I had a case of these in my office at my Myrtle Beach office, and I had to carry them. I had to bring those with me to Oklahoma because we were going to be selling them and the money going to his wife, Kim, at the celebration of life. And the adventure that I took, and the adventure that this case of books took heading out last week, was epic. And I'm going to talk about it in just a minute when I come back from our first commercial break. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL, every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL, every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Ann Dow, for the show A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness. We join together each Monday at 7 p.m., so tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. Make sure after the, if you miss the live or if you miss part of the live show, you can always get the replay, or you can replay the video on facebook.com/talkradionyc, or you can download the podcast and listen it in your car or while you're working out at Spotify, Apple, iTunes, anywhere you can get your podcast. As a matter of fact, to be honest, I'm a couple of weeks behind in uploading the podcast. So I'm going to get on that tomorrow. Somebody just hit me up in direct message on Facebook here and asked me where I get my haircut. I just got a cut, man. So little known fact about me, I'm really particular because I'm an actor about where I get my haircut, but I'm actually not so particular that I'm not afraid to go to somewhere. It's not that expensive as long as I do a nice job. So I got a girl, and I refuse to let anybody else cut my hair except for her. So if she's not working, I don't go. But I actually go to Sports Clips, man. So anyway, I appreciate the question. Somebody set me up on that. And I just had to get a cut because I had 10 auditions this week. 10 auditions already. I've already banged out 9 of them. I banged out 8 of them. I got 2 more to go unless more come up this week. Anyway, getting back to my story. And then the second half of the show, we're going to have Mike Finelli on to talk track and field. But I had this case of these books. Now, the case of books weighs, man, I don't even know. When I put it on the scale at the airport, I want to say it weighed 45 pounds. So, I mean, it's pretty heavy. You know, I mean, obviously I'm a pretty strong guy, but I mean, when you're lugging a box of 45 pound box of books on your shoulder, you know, hauling through the airport and whatnot, it gets a little heavy from all the way out in the parking lot, all the way in. Anyway, so little known fact about me, well, I've mentioned it before. As a matter of choice, a couple of years ago, I made the decision I'm only going to fly first class. Okay. And I fly like 150,000 miles a year. And one of the reasons why I do is because you get the free luggage. We also still get free booze in first class and free food. But anyway, I get to check 3 bags because of my status with American Airlines. I only fly in American Airlines. Now, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, and I mentioned it on social media recently. Now, I only fly American Airlines, and I've always been happy with them. And even right now, I don't have a real problem, but I have noticed that a tremendous number of flights lately, and I fly almost every weekend or every week, have been delayed. And they keep saying, well, it's they keep blaming it on maintenance issues, or they keep blaming it on staffing issues. I'm not really sure what the truth is. All I know is that flights have been delayed. So anyway, the plan was I was flying from Myrtle Beach to Tulsa. Now, the celebration of life was happening in Oklahoma City. But I made the decision I was going to fly to Tulsa because I wanted to meet with a couple of theaters in Tulsa about promoting some shows there. And I was going to reconnect with an old friend, somebody I actually coached years ago when I was coaching at University of Toledo. She lived there. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to fly to Tulsa. I'm going to drive to Oklahoma City and I'll drive back, you know, stay the night in Oklahoma City, drive back to Tulsa. And then I was going to be in Tulsa for 2 days. And then I had to fly to Chicago because my production company, my promotion company, we had a concert at the Egyptian Theater in DeKalb, Illinois, where Northern Illinois University is, PS, on Friday night. And then I was going to fly back to Myrtle Beach. Well, my flight out of Myrtle Beach is delayed, and it's delayed a crazy, like a 2.5 hour delay. So now I'm in a situation where I'm landing in Charlotte and I've got to connect to Tulsa. Now, when I land in Charlotte, I had essentially 15 minutes to get from my plane. Now, I'm the first one off. I'm sitting in seat 1A. I'm the first one off. So I know that I can start hiking it, but it's a hike to get from one terminal to the next and so that I can make it to the flight. I got 15 minutes before I know that they're going to close the doors. So I've got a garment bag with my suits in it and I've got a backpack. I've checked the box of books and I checked my big suitcase. Okay. I hike it to the plane. I get there just in the nick of time and fly to Tulsa. When I land in Tulsa, I get a notification on my phone that my luggage did not make it to the plane, which is no shocker because I barely made it to the plane. So I'm like, okay, that's fine. You know, so I go into the baggage thing at American Airlines in Tulsa, and there's a lady working there. And I say, you know what? My bag didn't arrive. She's like, well, what do you want us to do with it when it gets here? It's going to arrive tonight. This is Tuesday night. Now, unfortunately, I needed these books that day. So at that point, it's impossible for the books to make it to the celebration of life. But we were having a separate ceremony just for close family and friends Wednesday morning. And I was like, you know what? Maybe even though it's an hour and a half, I'll drive all the way back, get the box of books, drive all the way back to Oklahoma City so that I can have these for the ceremony the next morning. So I'm like, you know what? Just hang on to them. So I'm driving to Oklahoma City because I got to go to the celebration of life ceremony. And as I'm driving there, I'm like, you know what? It's not my fault that I'm late. And so I'm thinking to myself, you know, maybe I should just have them drive the books to my hotel. So in my head, that's what I'm thinking. So I go back online. And like I say, I mean, I'm in like the second highest tier on American Airlines. I only fly American Airlines. So I go on there and I'm like, you know, I pay all that money to fly first class. They should get the books to me. They should get my luggage to me. So I go online, I change it, and I put in my hotel information in Oklahoma City. So I'm thinking, okay, they're going to drive this case of books and they're going to drive my suitcase to me and deliver it to my hotel, and then I'll have it the next morning. So I don't have to drive all the way back and forth, right? So I get up the next morning, I check online, nothing, man. It's saying that my luggage is still back in Tulsa. I'm like, okay, it is what it is. It's still in Tulsa, no big deal. Even though I had put in, you know, hey, drive it to my hotel. So I go to the ceremony the next morning. I apologize. Hey, I don't have the book, you know. So I drive all the way back to Tulsa. I get to Tulsa at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon. And I go into the baggage claim. And the lady was kind of helping somebody. She's like, do you need some help real quick? I said, well, I'm just here to pick up my bags, you know, because the app had said that they were there in Tulsa. I'm just here picking my bag and the box. It was the same woman from the night before. She's like, oh, I just sent those to Oklahoma City. I'm like, why would you send them to Oklahoma City? I just checked the app. I literally drove. I'm not going back to Oklahoma City. Why would you send them to Oklahoma City? She's like, well, you said to send them to Oklahoma City. I said, well, yeah, yesterday I said to send them. But I mean, it's today now. Why would you send them to Oklahoma City? And so I'm like, well, can you just tell the driver to bring him back? She's like, oh, we didn't drive them there. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't drive them there? She's like, we flew them there. I was like, why would you fly? And Oklahoma City's an hour and a half from here. Why wouldn't you just have some dude put it on a truck and drive? That's what they do in other cities. And she's like, oh, well, we don't have enough drivers, so we flew it. So I'm like, well, where's my luggage now? Because at this point, I'm still wearing the same clothes from the yesterday. You know? All I got is a bunch of suits, but I don't have any dress shoes because they're in my effing bag, you know? And so she's like, oh, well, they're in Dallas right now. I'm like, why would they be in Dallas? And she's like, oh, there's no direct flights to Oklahoma City. So I'm like, I just can't even wrap my head around the whole thing. So anyway, she's starting to get upset, almost in tears because, I'm going to be honest with you. Not my proudest moment. I really wasn't being that nice to her because at this point, so I'm like, you know what? Fine. So I walk out. She's helping this other dude. I come back in and I'm like, you know what? Let's just figure it out. So long story fairly short, she's like, well, they're going to send them back. So I'm like, okay, that's cool. So that night, Wednesday night, I get a phone call. Now I'm leaving on Friday. They're sending them back. I go back to the airport on Thursday. They're still not there. Okay. So finally the luggage gets back. I don't pick up my luggage. Now I had to go to Walmart and buy some more t-shirts, which PS, I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago. I got a weird shaped body, man. I'm like the floating chest. Very few t-shirts in the world fit me. They fit me well. So it doesn't look like a tent. And it's actually the Walmart brand George t-shirts, bro. I'm telling you, go and get those. If you got a body shape like mine, go and get those. So I go to Walmart, I get some more t-shirts, I get underwear, I get socks, I get, you know, beater undershirts and whatnot. I went and bought these new kicks. I didn't even need new sneakers, just so I could work out. So I spent 4 days in the same clothes. So anyway, that box of books, this was Philip's last practical joke on me, because what ended up happening is that box of books went Myrtle Beach to Charlotte to Tulsa to Dallas to Oklahoma City, turned around, went Dallas to Tulsa. I never even got to take them where they needed to go. I had to hike them on my shoulder. I pick them up. I walk over to the ticket counter, slap it down, send it to O'Hare, because I got to go to O'Hare at this point so I can go to the concert that I'm going to. Get to O'Hare, pick it up, throw it on my shoulder with my big suitcase and my garment bag that I never even wore any of the suits out of, and my backpack, and I got to hike it through O'Hare. Anybody that's ever flown into O'Hare knows that the parking, the car rental place is offsite. So I got to get onto a bus with all this stuff, and I get off the bus, and I got to hike it through the car rental place, throw it in the car, drive to the cab, have the concert. Thank God we made some money, because the concert actually did well. I made my nut like 2 months ahead of time, thank God. And so it kind of eased the pain. Then I have to hike it all the way back. I got to hike that box of books and all my gear through the car rental place again, onto the bus, into O'Hare, check it in and bring it home, and then hike it back to my office where it all started from. And I can just imagine my buddy Philip, who, like I said, I mean, the world lost one of just the most pure, funny, great human beings in the world when he passed away. And I look at it like it was his last practical joke on me, because he would always joke that he was a prima donna and everything had to be about him. Well, that entire trip was about him and hiking his books through all these airports and everything. And all they ended up doing was just coming right back to my office, my Myrtle Beach office, and they're going to sit there until God knows when. So anyway, I'm going to come back for my second commercial break. And second half of the show, I've got my special guest on, Mike Finelli. He's going to be chiming in. He's a track and field historian and track and field journalist and track and field competitor, long time. And we're going to be talking about the Olympic Games, mostly track and field. And we're also in the second half of that segment, we're going to be talking about his memorabilia collection for track and field and some of his favorite moments. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc.
Do you feel uninformed about menopause and how it impacts on your life? Hi, I'm Pat Duckworth, women's health strategist and host of the Hot Women Rock radio show, empowering women leaders at menopause. Join me every Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 3 p.m. UK time on talkradio.nyc for interviews with inspirational women who will share their top tips to rock your world.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. Make sure that you go to Spotify, Apple, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast from, so you can get the podcast replay of this show, or you'll be able to see the video on Talk Radio NYC's Facebook page. Second half of the show getting ready to start here, and I have my special guest, Mike Finelli, who's chiming in from gorgeous San Francisco Bay Area. Mike, how you doing? You're on mute, so you got to unmute yourself, buddy. You got it, baby. You got it. I wish I could unmute you, but I can't. But Mike, while he's finding the mute button here, there we go.
Gotcha.
All set, baby. Yeah, man.
I'm a dinosaur, but not that big a dinosaur. How you doing?
Yeah,
How are you?
I'm doing great. When I emailed you about the stuff and the link for the show, I noticed that your email was like Helzberg something properties or something along those lines. And dude, just like an hour ago, on my Twitter feed, there was something from the Helzberg Helzberg winery. Are you familiar with that winery that had the big news come out?
What I do professionally is I actually sell vineyards and wineries. I'm with a brokerage called Sotheby's International Real Estate, and my area of specialization is here in wine country, tucked away way out in the middle of the boondocks where the track and field garage resides. But on my day job is I represent the purchase and sale of wineries and vineyards.
Man, very cool. Yeah, because they apparently one of the wineries had a contest. There were 7,000 applicants, and these two women were hired, and they're going to make $10,000 a month or something crazy.
Right, good. Good for them, right?
Good for them, man. It is what it is, bro. Yeah. But listen, we're talking about the Olympics, and I thought this was an incredibly good Olympic for track and field, not necessarily for the U.S. team. Now, the women, my opinion, did amazingly well, of course, but overall, I mean, you're talking about 3 world records, 12 Olympic records, like 100 and something national records in track and field. And so let's talk first about probably what I consider to be, I want to get your opinion, the most amazing record that was set, the most amazing race that I've ever seen. I wish I was there to see it live. But in your opinion, of the 3 world records that were set, what's the most impressive to you?
Well, clearly, the Carsten Warholm 400 intermediate hurdles record is so extraordinary. I like to measure stuff. I like to understand where things fit in perspective with other performances, et cetera. His 45.94, if you look at it from a point table, okay, so the way you score in a decathlon is using the scoring tables. If you look at the scoring tables for 45.94, that is 1,341 points. The most that anyone has ever scored, any male has ever scored in the history of the Olympic track and field. 1341 points has only been surpassed by three other athletes ever in the history of the sport, inside or outside of the Olympic Games. Jan Zalesny, the world record holder in the javelin, his top performance was 1365. There are two Usain Bolt performances, his world record at 100, 200. And then finally, Mike Powell. All of those were done outside of the Olympics. When you're outside of the Olympics, you don't have the rounds. You don't have those sorts of things going on. And that was so extraordinary. It just is mind-blowing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was the event that I chose as well. I mean, 4594, to put in perspective for people that aren't necessarily track fans, 4594 in the flat 400, I believe, gets you to the Olympic trials. I think if you run 4594, you're at least going to get in, or at least be on the list. And that's in the flat. That's without 10 hurdles in your way. But not to discredit or not to be completely outshine, Sydney McLaughlin and her 51.46 in the 400 hurdles. I mean, that also, just in a flat race is incredible.
Yeah, mind blowing. Like you were mentioning that 45.94, go back to it. It would have won the flat 400 meters every single Olympics up to 1960.
Man, God.
Right. And Sydney was just off the charts, wasn't she? I mean, coming off of her Olympic trials performance, the world record there, going head to head with the with Muhammad, Dalila Muhammad, off the hook. It was great. Those were a couple of the highlights. Interesting. Here we are. We're talking about Olympic track and field. There's a lot of events in Olympic track and field. And the highlights are the 400 intermediate hurdles, both men's and women's. Okay, that's cool. Holy Moses.
Yeah, and the thing is that I'm a distance guy. I was a distance coach, and I coached athletes to the Olympic trials and world championships in distance. I'm a distance guy, but I love track and field, and I feel as though you're a distance guy, but you are cut from that same old. You just love track and field.
Yeah. Yeah, track and field. I like the Olympics. Not for all aspects of track and field, and not just the United States, but internationally. There's a lot of great feel good stories. There's so much inspiration that takes place in watching the Olympic Games, and it was cool that this happened to be like the year of the intermediate hurdles. But there were so many other remarkable performances.
Yeah, I think that one of the great competitions to watch was the men's shot put. And for those guys, first of all, Krauser, I mean, what can you say about this dude? I mean, he's obviously the world record holder in a record that was arguably juiced up to be real about it, right? So it was a record that had stood for a long time. He ends up being the world record. And not at the Olympics, but prior to that at the Olympic trials. And but for those three guys, I mean, they really separated themselves out, and it was deja vu. Am I right?
Yeah, that was really kind of cool. One of the neat things about the shot put was, and this is the first time this is ever history of the Olympic Games in all sports, not just track and field. It was the first time that the exact same three athletes finished in the same order on the podium two consecutive Olympic Games. Pretty cool.
Man.
But the other thing about that, come on. Krauser throws the averages in his six throws, his averages in excess of 75 feet. Go figure.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. The great thing about one thing I like about him is that I've met him in person at a couple of his girlfriend is a pole vaulter. So I've met him at pole vaulting events, street events and whatnot. Super nice. I mean, he's a giant though. I mean, this dude is what, 6'7", 6'8". He's built like a defense. Honestly, I think that he could walk into the NFL right now and be one of the most athletic defensive linemen that there is, without a doubt. I mean, the dude is a real athlete.
And one of the coolest, most down-to-earth guys you could ever meet. I actually got to meet him for the first time in person. I've watched him for a number of years. I'm familiar with his family and that sort of thing. At the trials, at the Olympic trials, he had just set the world record in the shot put. And 45 minutes or an hour later, I got to, his agent introduced me to him. We had the nicest conversation. Just kind of a cool, casual, lighthearted conversation. And in his hand, he had an entire bottle of champagne. He was drinking this bottle of champagne from from the bottle.
Yeah,
set the world record, and
yeah,
minuscule in his massive paw, as you can
imagine. Oh man, I mean, he's got like catcher's mitts for hands, you know. And most people, you know, people outside of track and field. I mean, one of the nice things I thought about this Olympic Games, we did get a chance to see a tremendous amount of track and field on TV, and we got to see. I mean, it was an odd schedule because they went morning night, and of course Tokyo is 12, 14 hours ahead of us, and so they were flip flop. We were watching the night and the morning, and the morning and the night. And opposite days, you know, but we did in what we would consider to be prime viewing hours. I mean, I felt as though we got to see a lot of track and field.
Yeah, I thought we got a really good dose of track this year, but in the entire thing that NBC did in that Peacock and that live streaming thing, the opportunity was there if you wanted to take advantage of it to see everything live. And, you know, and that's what I did. I streamed. I was up at 3:30 every morning because I'm in California. So it's 3:30 our time. It was brutal, man. It was an endurance event, an ultra marathon. But it was so worthwhile. And it just the coverage was extraordinary. And you've got guys like Tim Hutchings, right? You know, who knows track inside out firsthand, you know, a 1984 Olympian in his own right. His insight and then Brit humor, and it was extraordinary. To that end, it was arguably one of the greatest, certainly viewing opportunities of an Olympic Games ever in my history in the sport, and that goes back a long way.
Right. I mean, what was the first Olympic Games that you recall from memory?
So I started.
You don't want to age yourself, man, but I'm with you.
I'm ancient. It's cool. You know, I started following track and field in 1966, 67. So the 1968 Olympic Games, black and white on my, you know, our great big console Philco TV. That was it. I was totally turned on to the Olympic Games. And that's my favorite Olympic Games ever for a variety of reasons, which I'm happy to chat about. But these Olympic Games surpassed any other Olympic Games that I've experienced since then. And I've had the privilege of attending many Olympic Games since that period of time, whether we're talking Los Angeles, Seoul, South Korea, you know, London had 2012 was probably my favorite Olympic Games prior to this one. I didn't think that this would be surpassed.
Nice. Well, listen, we got to go to our last commercial break. And when we come back, we'll talk more about your collection that you got that is famous on Facebook. And we'll talk about some more memories. I'm Kevin Barbaro. You're listening to Coffee Talk XL on talkradio.nyc. We'll be back in just about 1 minute.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back, everybody, to Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc. Make sure that after the show, you are able to get the podcast on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, wherever you get your podcasts, and tune in every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific time, live to catch a little bit about acting, business, travel, track and field like we are tonight. I got my special guest, Mike Finelli, who's a track historian and track journalist, on to talk about the Olympics. We were just talking about this Olympics, but as Mike was mentioning before the commercial break, his very first Olympic Games that he remembers was 1968 in Mexico City, and he mentioned a couple others. Mike, how many Olympic Games have you actually physically been to?
Five actually physically. A couple of what I've done, though, and we're considering doing this again for Paris, although I am signed up for the track and field news tour, is we've rented a house in the immediate area and brought in the live feed, so we're on the same schedule, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, for London, we rented a house down in Provence, in the southern part of France, a wine country, because obviously, you know, I have an affinity for wine. And we rented a house. We had the live BBC feed. We were an hour ahead. It was so cool. Day trips, lunches, this sort of thing. Come on back, you know, and then be there live, you know, for, you know, all the action. That was pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Now, I mentioned before, you are somewhat Facebook famous for your track and field collection. And from what I understand, now give me a visual of this, but from what I understand, you essentially have like a room or a garage that has been designated as a museum for track and field. Am I far off the base on that?
No, you're pretty close. I refer to it as the track and field garage. It's an ancillary space on our property that is dedicated to the what I call the track and field archives. It's the history of the sport. I've collected in excess of 4,000 pieces. That's what comprises the track and field garage.
And your wife is cool with that? She's got to be at this point, right?
She's got her she cave, you know, or whatever you call it. And, you know, we had a little prenup going in, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. You get the track stuff. She gets the rest.
Yeah.
What would you say is either the most valuable or the coolest piece of memorabilia that you have?
Well, I think what's kind of neat to understand is that, the breadth and width of what the archives, as I like to refer to them as, covers is so substantial. But you don't get to substantial. You don't start at substantial. So where I started was they began in unsuspectingly in March of 1969. And the very, very first piece ever from the archives, this is it. This is
wow.
This is it. This is the AAU Indoor National Track and Field Championships. And if you could see closely, you'll see that it's autographed by like all kinds of athletes from them. So on March 1st, 1969, the archives unofficially began. It was just a couple of months after the 1968 Olympic Games, which we referenced earlier. And I was 12 years old. I had, you know, was so in love with the sport by at that point in time. And I went running around, and anybody who had that signature USA navy blue uniform with the red letters on it, I went run up to them. I didn't know who they were necessarily. Some I did, some I didn't. I got their autograph. Yeah. I chased them around all evening until the men's 3 mile. And that's where George Young set the world indoor record for 3 miles. It was so spectacular. Your first big track meet, you see a world record, right? Come on.
Yeah.
So at any rate, that was the last time I asked anybody for an autograph was then, but that's what began it. And, you know, you always have that first step, right? And now the archives are 4,000 pieces.
Man. Now, do you have an archive of track and field news also, or?
Well, thanks for asking. Yeah, and that's one of the most difficult things is in collecting is to get the entire and complete track and field news.
Yeah.
I do have every single issue from volume one, number one, from the 1948. But trying to get 1948 to 1952 was a whole nother story. And I'm happy to tell you about it if you want to take a second to do so.
Yeah, yeah. No, how did you go about accumulating? Because I would think that you really got to go digging for somebody that was alive and they kept it.
You got it. You have to dig hard to get 1948, 49, 50, 51, 52, anything before 1960. So I came across an Olympics collector in France. He didn't speak any English. My French is very limited. We began a communication that lasted for 3 or 4 months with our limited language skills. But when I explained to him that what it was that I was trying to collect was for the purposes of creating a historical archive that would later be gifted away, given to an institution to use for higher learning and the education of the sport and the history of the sport going forward, then we were able to kind of come to terms of agreement. I sent him a boatload of dough, hoping that I would actually get the package. The package arrived, all good. And that's where 1948, 49, 50, 51 came from. And he had gotten them from a library in Cologne, Germany.
Wow, man, those well traveled then, obviously. And now you've been to, from what I understand, you've been to since the 1960, since 1972, you've been to almost or most or all of the Olympic trials. Is that correct?
Oh yeah, no. I've actually been to every one of the last 11 Olympic track and field trials I've been to. It's my favorite meet in the world. First and foremost.
Man. So you were there in Sacramento when my athlete, Brianna Shook, missed the steeplechase water jump and was disqualified.
Boy,
that was a heartbreaker, man.
Remember how hot that was?
Oh, dude, that was brutal hot. You know, not as hot as Baton Rouge,
New Orleans. Yeah.
Or New Orleans, yeah.
1992. That was cool. Yeah, that was a great Olympic trials. That was my in my top three or four.
Well,
but I think
that
might be because of the after parties or something like that.
Well, yeah, I mean it was New Orleans, man, and probably my favorite race of that was the men's 10,000 because the dude just took off and nobody went. And they're like, well, it's suicide to try and run that fast, and he ran away with it.
Yeah, you know, you never know. I mean, the thing about the trials is it's also do and die, you know, your top three or you go home, you know, and there's nothing worse than fourth, right? You know, you'd rather be CFL than fourth.
Yeah. Let me ask you real quick, and we got to wrap up here, but in your opinion, and this is debated on social media quite a bit right now, do you think that having an Olympic trials hurts us, helps us, or it's a net zero when it comes to our performances at the Olympic Games?
Well, I actually really like the idea of an Olympic track and field trials that is very, very objective versus subjective. And in years past and in other countries, they're subjective, meaning that it's a selection process. You know, right. You've demonstrated that you can make the top three under all the necessary pressures. Ideally, those pressures are set up to replicate the actual Olympic Games. I like our process. I wouldn't change a thing.
Awesome. Well, listen, Mike, I really appreciate you being on Coffee Talk and sharing your expertise and talking about. I'm probably just as equally as impressed with the fact that you have the entire track and field news collection as pretty much anything else, including all of your Olympic trials that you've been to. I you know, the fact that you were able to track and were you communicating with this guy by actual snail mail back and forth, or was this by email?
It was email, but it was very intermittent, and it went like on for a long, but it was worth it.
Yeah. Well, listen, I really appreciate it. And hopefully I'll get to run into you at the next Olympic trials or maybe in Eugene at the World Championships. I put in for my ticket thing. I'm sure that you have too. So listen, I appreciate it. Everybody, will be back next Tuesday night, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific time live. Join me back here for Coffee Talk XL. I'm Kevin Barbaro, and you're listening on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Innings. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
In a post-COVID world, you may have many unanswered questions regarding your health. Are you looking to live a healthier lifestyle? Do you have a desire to learn more about mental health and enhance your quality of life? Or do you just want to participate in self-understanding and awareness? I'm Frank R. Harrison, host of Frank About Health, and each Thursday, I will tackle these questions and work to enlighten you. Tune in every Thursday at 5 p.m. on talkradio.nyc, and I will be Frank About Health to advocate for all of us.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Are you passionate about the conversation around racism? Hi, I'm Reverend Dr. TLC, host of the Dismantle Racism Show, which airs every Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Join me and my amazing guests as we discuss ways to uncover, dismantle, and eradicate racism. That's Thursdays at 11 o'clock a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Have you ever thought of reinventing yourself? Are you looking to create a new life's journey? Hi, I'm Kevin Barbaro, host of Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 5, 8 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc. Tune in live to hear me and my guests from a variety of different backgrounds. As a former college coach and a current full-time actor and owner of multiple companies, my show is as eclectic as my life. That's Coffee Talk XL every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.